that it says it's better to meet a bear that has lost its cubs than to meet a fool at the time of his foolishness. In other words, a bear at the time that it's lost its cubs is enraged, you know, like more the emotions are very powerful, and if you go close to them, they could harm you very, really bad. A bear could harm you in general. This is the worst situation of a bear, okay, where he lost his cubs, where she lost the cubs, okay? And it's still better to meet up with a bear that just lost the cubs than a fool at the time of his foolishness. Right. The answer is that animals, the animal kingdom, operate by a certain set of rules. If you know the set of rules, you could go any place in the woods. In other words, there are a piranha, right? You could go swimming with piranha, and they will not bother you if you know the rules, okay? But if you don't know the rules, they'll eat you completely. They'll kill you, wipe you out completely. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a bear. A wild animal operates based on certain principles, and if you know the principles of which they operate on, you could go through the woods, meet up with them, and basically you would be safe. However, if you were raised in the woods and you came out to the city, then you would not be prepared for certain germs, crossing the streets, and different things like that. So, but there's certain rules that work in certain places. A person, let's say, for instance, in a moment of his foolishness, for example, a person gets angry. For instance, a person that gets angry, okay? So, at the moment of that anger, you don't know what he could do, what he's capable of doing. He loses himself. He's out of control. When emotions become wild and they lose control, if you don't know what they're capable of doing, they could do anything at that moment. A person, like a person that's drunk, you don't know what he's capable of doing. So therefore, that is why it says this verse, because a human is, in that sense, is more dangerous. What do I mean he's more dangerous? Because you don't know what to expect. You don't know how to prepare for it. But however, an animal, if you know how to operate, you know the rules, they operate based on certain rules, so therefore you could always rely, if you know the rules. The danger of going into the woods without, is when you don't know the rules, that's why it's dangerous. Like, for instance, with a dog. Most people, when they're frightened of a dog, they run away. That's the worst thing. That awakens their desire to chase and to harm you. You should face and stare them down. Get that? In other words, if you squat and face them, they turn away. That's you know what I mean? That's what I heard. It's supposed to work. I never experienced it. But the fact is, if you know how to operate with animals, with wild animals, they work based on a system. But a fool, at the time of his foolishness, when his emotions take over, at that moment, you don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't even know what he's going to do. It's not based on a system that you're aware of. It could operate in many different ways. The question is what about, since the person, even the emotions operate according to a certain system of psychology, so if you know the system of psychology, you should be able to predict the outcome. And the answer is that when a person's emotions are wild, there are too many possibilities. I don't know if you can figure that out, even with psychology, what to expect in the moment of where he loses himself, like a moment of anger, or a person gets very happy and then they just jump all over the place. They do things that are wild. They could really do things that are harmful, and in that moment you can really be harmed, because you don't know what to expect. Verse 13, it says that if a person repays harm in place of good, in other words, if you do a person a favor, and then he harms you, he hurts you. You understand? He doesn't appreciate. He says, harm will never be removed from his house. Rabban says there are two types of poems. When you, when people get to know that you don't repent, in fact, you can harm a person that did you a favor. So there's two harms. One is, when you're in trouble, nobody will be there to help you. Because they'll say, if I help you, you're only going to repay it with evil. So therefore, why help you if you're going to hurt me? So therefore, you lose that. You'll get a reputation where people will stop wanting to help you. Says, and secondly, the harm is that in the long run, you'll turn against God. You can't be a religious person. Because if you can't appreciate what people do for you, you can't appreciate what God does for you. What's the difference? If you appreciate when somebody or something does something for you, so then what's the difference if it's God or a person? If they're doing something for you, you should appreciate. But if you don't appreciate people, he says, it's impossible to be able to appreciate God. So therefore, it's really against the whole idea of a religious person. That's what the Rabbah says. That's the two consequences of that type of person. One more question, and the question is, what's the nature of the person? What's the nature of the person that would do such a thing? How many people do such a thing? I can understand you don't pay a person back. You don't appreciate. But why should you want to hurt a person that wants to help you? The answer is that for some reason he wants to deny. It's a denial that he owes somebody, or it's a denial that he needs help. In other words, the person doesn't like to owe another person, and so therefore to cover that up, he hurts the person. Or he feels like a weakness. He's dependent on others. He wants to deny that he's dependent on others. So that is the quality of the person that does evil when somebody else does good to him. All right, we're in chapter 17, verse 14. And it says, he who opens water is the beginning of a quarrel, and before it is revealed, leave the argument. We'll quit the argument. What he means is that if you make all the commentaries say the same thing, that if you make a hole like in a dike, and the water starts pressing on that little spot, so it starts opening. Okay? So he says the same thing is when you make the hole in the dike, that's like the beginning of a quarrel. And if you don't quit the quarrel before it goes public, quit the quarrel. Leave it go. Let it go. End the quarrel. Don't continue it. Okay? And the question is, of course, why? What is he saying? In other words, the metaphor is that it'll spread out, it'll break the whole dike. All the water will come pouring out. It makes the hole bigger and bigger. The question is, what does that mean insofar as the argument is concerned? The answer is that there's different versions. According to Rashi, in other words, when you get into an argument, and the more the argument spreads, the more you put down. And therefore, it's going to go public, you're a disgrace. I mean, people find fault with you. Both people, whoever you're fighting with, once it goes public, both people are hurt. For different reasons. One reason is that people find fault. The guy that's arguing with you is going to start finding fault and start defending himself while he's angry with you to the public. So therefore, he's going to make a bad name for you, and vice versa. So it's better to stop a fight before it gets too far. Then also another thing, people start taking sides. Once people start taking sides, it's out of your hands. Once it's out of your hands, that's what the Mitzvah Zavit says. Once it's out of your hands, then there's much that you can't do. We're up to chapter 17, verse 15. And it says, he who makes righteous the wicked, and who makes he who makes righteous the wicked, and he who makes the wicked righteous, it's abomination of God also both of them. Okay? Well, once again, he who makes the wicked righteous, okay, and he who condemns the righteous, okay, it's abomination of God also both of them. In other words, if you show where somebody does something bad and you condone it, or show where it's all right or it's not so bad, he's still an okay guy, you know what I mean? Like you condone an evil act, like you brag about where you hurt somebody, and then they say, yeah, that's okay, what's the big deal? It's only making fun, you know what I mean? It's only a joke, you know what I mean? Like you make something like that, you make light of it, or you say it's okay, you understand the incorrect things. And the same thing when you see somebody good, so you say, oh, he's an extremist or something like that. You understand, you put him down. Okay? That's the thing. Okay, so the question is, why is that why is that an abomination? And so the question is, what are the consequences of doing this? Okay? It says, so the Rabbeinu Yonah has a few consequences. The first consequence is that people are dependent on others for their security. So when you back them up, so that strengthens their security in their evil. So it strengthens them, and it becomes harder for them to change because of society. And also, since also becomes strengthened when he's honored, and when people say it's okay, so in the eyes of others, they look up to him. So it gets others to respect him. Okay? Also, putting down the tzaddik, so people are not, in other words, sometimes when you're in the presence of a righteous person, you feel a little guilty. It affects you, or maybe you would hear an idea, but if they're not respected, so you won't listen, won't give a chance for the public to really repent, because they won't have respect for him. In other words, the public is not changed when they first start changing. They're not changed by wisdom. They're changed by a certain respect or attachment to the wise person or the righteous person, you see? But if he's put down, so then people will not be drawn to him, so they'll never have a chance to listen to wisdom. And the last thing is that it'll strengthen others to become bad, because they see they get honor when they're bad. Okay? Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. Like, for instance, in the United States, people brag about and are complimented if they cheated on taxes and got away with it. So after a while, more people feel like you feel embarrassed if you don't cheat on taxes. You feel embarrassed if you say, well, I was 100% honest and I paid all my taxes. You feel like a jerk in our society, because our society would look down on such a person, you see? So therefore, because people go by feelings, people go by their feelings, so therefore they're going to be drawn to do evil acts and be drawn to evil people. And be turned off by good people, and therefore they'll be turned away. So the wicked person, since he's crazy, will encourage him to continue in his evil ways, and he'll be more firm and more secure in doing it, because that's the way people feel strengthened by other people. That is the result of condoning or honoring somebody that does evil and putting down a person that is righteous. The person that's condoning it, it shows his value system. In other words, the one that's condoning the evil or putting down the righteous, that shows his value system. And therefore, he is the one, and it's the people that do that that make things worse. And they themselves will have the consequences of what we said before. They'll be drawn to the wicked and they'll do wicked things, and they themselves will be turned off from the righteous. They'll never straighten themselves out.
We're up to chapter 17, verse 16, and it says, why is it that there is money in the hands of the fool to acquire chachma, and he doesn't have a heart or a mind to acquire wisdom? Once again, it says, why is it that there are fools that have the money to pay for an education, and they actually do get an education to acquire wisdom, and they don't have a mind for it? They don't have a mind for it. Not the physical. It's not talking about physical. It's talking about a fool. Okay? So in other words, according to the way all the commentaries learn this verse, what the verse is saying is there are fools that have the money to get a Jewish education, and they do get a Jewish education, and they didn't learn anything. They're still fools. Because they don't have the lev ayin. Ayin means they don't have. Lev literally means heart. Some people translate the heart as mind. But anyway, the question is, what is it? In other words, this pasuk is telling me that it's possible to learn Torah and still in all that I'm not really learning Torah, that I'm really still a fool. Okay. The first answer is Rashi. He says that he learns Torah to acquire a reputation. He's only interested in a reputation. Okay? Now, the thing is, in other words, what Rashi is saying, if your motive for learning Torah is wrong, then that Torah is worthless. That's a fool learning Torah, and that's it. However, you have to be careful here, because sages say that a person has to learn lo lishma so as to get to lishma. Lo lishma means the incorrect motive. That he uses the incorrect motive, after a while, he will get the correct motive. But it's not 100% true. In other words, what we're saying is that if you use the incorrect motive and you never reach the correct motive, that's worthless. Then your learning is worthless. It's only we allow you, we give you a license to learn lo lishma, the incorrect motive, with the hope that you will get to the correct motive. But there's some people that never change and never get to the correct motive, and therefore they have to, therefore their learning is worthless. They're still a fool. They might be a very big thinker, very abstract thinker in Torah, but because their motive is wrong, we say that they're fools. And that's the term that's used there, as a fool. Okay? So that's the first thing, is motive. You find this in by our sages, by the Omer, where Rabbi Akiva's 24,000 students died, and the sages say the reason why they died is because they were very competitive, and if somebody was a weaker student, they wouldn't take the time to help them because their competition drove them on. Okay? So therefore they were punished. God punished them and they got a plague. They died. In other words, God gave them the death penalty because they were learning incorrectly. They were incorrect motive. Okay? Not they were learning incorrectly. They were learning incorrect motive. Okay. The Meiri says also an incorrect motive, and he uses the competition. The whole thing is to beat the other guy. Okay? That's the incorrect motive that he gives. Okay? Now, the interesting interpretation of this verse is the Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that if he doesn't acquire good traits from Torah, or he doesn't use the Torah to remove bad traits, right? That means he always has bad traits. He will always have bad traits. That's what we're talking about. It's not the motive, but it is in the learning itself. There's two types of learning. There's learning where I gain knowledge, but the knowledge does not affect me. You know, different than a donkey carrying books. In other words, you just have ideas in the mind, and you can quote these ideas, or even explain the ideas, but the ideas never affect you. You see? That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says, that when is it worthless? Where the ideas never affect you. Okay? So, therefore, that type of learning is a waste. Okay? Now, the question is, let's say, for instance, a person learns Torah, and it never affects him, but he teaches others. So when he teaches others, he's benefiting others. The answer is that if it doesn't affect you, then when you teach others, you're only going to teach others the value of ideas, of having ideas. Because if you yourself have never been affected by ideas, how could you get that idea across? So then you're not really teaching Torah if you only teach ideas and you have never experienced the fact that you've never changed, so then you can't understand that idea. So when you give it over to others, there's going to be a certain amount of loss. And there's one thing also wrong, that the Rabbeinu Yonah explains it in verse 17. Okay? The next pasuk. We're not going to go through the pasuk. Okay? How he learns it. But anyway, he says like this. If you learn it for the wrong motive, or if you... never, if learning that never affects you, doesn't change who you are, so then you're going to have to use ideas for your own benefit. And if you use it for your own benefit, then you could do more harm than you can without knowledge. In other words, like this. When Cain wanted to kill Hevel, okay, so it was the first murder. He didn't know how to kill. He didn't know what the Bible taught to him. So it says over there that when God spoke to Cain, it says, the blood, plural bloods, of your brother are crying up to me. So one of the interpretations of bloods is that he punched him on the arm, or he banged him with a stone on the arm, and it drew blood, but he didn't die. He banged him on the other arm. He didn't know how to kill him until he finally hit him on the head and he killed him. So, and now I'm sure Hevel did not stand around and say, good, try this spot, try that spot. He's probably trying to defend himself. So until Cain could kill Hevel, probably took hours. Today we haven't, because we have knowledge, with one bomb we can wipe out a whole city. We could wipe out a whole city, and then the effects of the radiation could do damage to millions of others. You understand? So therefore, with knowledge, you can do more harm than without knowledge. So therefore, let's say, for instance, you want to hurt somebody. You just react, so that's one type of hurting somebody. But if you could think about how to really get the guy, you understand, you're trained to think, so then you can work out how to harm the guy in a way that you don't get in trouble. You could do a lot of damage. And a lot of other things. I mean, when you think you could do more harm than others, more harm than you could without knowledge. So he says the damage of learning, of training a person that doesn't change his traits, and therefore, the ideas can attach to his bad traits. He can start using with the trained mind to do harm. It becomes doubly worse. You understand? So he says, that is why the pasuk says, that is why the verse says, in this pasuk it says, how come the fool has money to hire a teacher? Like it's a catastrophe that a fool should have the money he wants to use it to hire a teacher
It's a terrible catastrophe. It's a catastrophe for him because it's not really learning. But then if he does learn, he can do more damage because if he never changes his bad traits, so he'll use his knowledge to carry out the bad traits, he can do more damage. So he says, therefore, it is better if he didn't have the money to hire a teacher to educate him in Torah if he can't change his traits. So therefore, it could come out, let's say a person can only learn an hour a day. And he learns, let's say, Musa, and he changes his traits and he changes his lifestyle. That guy is better than a person that's an abstract thinker and can learn much more deeper than him, than the first guy. But he doesn't. But it doesn't affect his trait. It doesn't affect his personality. It doesn't train him to be a tzaddik, to be a chacham. So since it doesn't train him, the first guy could be better off. Isn't that a question? He definitely is better off. Even a weaker student is better off if it affects him than a person that's very deep and it doesn't affect him. In other words, we're defining what is learning according to Torah. You understand? And according to Torah, learning is not just getting ideas, not just being like a donkey carrying books. It's the ideas that should affect who you are. And that is learning in Torah, where the ideas affect who you are. The lowest level of a thinker is a person that learns Musa. Why? Because Musa is the least abstract of all the subjects in Torah. Let's say you only have the ability to learn Musa. The Rabbeinu Yonah says, you are in the club of being a Chacham. The only difference between you and Moshe Rabbeinu is the quantity of knowledge that he has. But the quantity is dependent on your ability that was given to you from birth. But the free choice of what I'm going to do with my knowledge, you understand, that's dependent on the free will. And everybody has the free will, as long as you have knowledge of Torah. So therefore, once you exercise your free will to do the right thing, how far you could go, that's you were born with. That's not your free choice anymore. The reason why you're not a Moshe Rabbeinu is because God did not create you to be a Moshe Rabbeinu. You understand? So therefore, but God created you to make a choice to live the right life or to live the incorrect life, that you do have a choice, you see? So therefore you are in the ballpark of Chachamim, once you make the choice to use learning as a means of developing your personality. We're up to chapter 17, verse 17, okay? We need a little slight introduction to this verse, okay? There are three types of friends, okay? There's a type of friend that is my friend only as long as I could use him. That's like a business friend, people in business, people in politics. They're usually friendly only as long as they need them, and then afterwards, there's a certain feeling of friendship, but the cause of the friendship is the situation. Once the situation passes, then there's no more friendship. The second type of friend is a friend like a psychological friend, that you draw to them because you... There's some identification there. You identify with them in a certain way. Okay. The third type of friend is based on a value system where your friendship is because of a value system. Okay? And you're drawn together because of a value system. That's the three types of friends. Okay? The pasuk that we're about to do is dealing with the third type of friend. What type of friend that is? When the value system is Torah. Okay? That's it. Alright, so verse 17 says, at all times he loves his friend, and a brother is born for problems, or situations of problems. In other words, the friend is at all times will be a friend,
But a brother will only be there in times of your troubles, okay? He'll be there for you only in times of trouble. That's what it seems to be saying. Anyway, it seems to be, the question is that there are different types of problems that a person could have. Is it all types of problems that the brother will deal with, or only a certain type of problems? That's the question. The question is that there are different types of brothers and sisters. I mean, there was Cain and Abel, where one of them killed his brother. I mean, he wasn't there for his troubles, you know what I mean? So the question is when he says brother for times of trouble, I mean, how is he defining brother, right? Okay. Okay, first let's take care of the first half of the verse. First half of the verse says that all times he's a friend, okay? Now, we mentioned there are three types of friends. So the first type of friend is only based on a situation. The second type of friend is based on some type of identification. Now, if an identification is broken, you understand, then you break up. In other words, you can only stay friends as long as you have identification. Once that identification, if something comes up that the identification is broken, then it's separated. You find that sometimes even with a parent. There's certain parents that accept their children no matter what their children do. They could be mass murderers and they'll still accept them. Certain parents where they draw the line after a certain point, that's it. In other words, it's not thought out. I'm not talking about where it's thought out. But I'm just saying there's a certain feeling that they break the identification. If the identification is broken, so then you can't relate to that person. Okay? The third type of person, which I think the Pasuk is talking about, and most of the commentaries learn that way, is that there's a friend based on the lifestyle, that you both have the same value system. And as long as you both have the same value system, then you'll go out of your way for whatever reason, okay, to help that person, okay? Let me give you a description. He says, this type of friend is there for any type of confusion, like you were talking about. Like if there's a confusion, there's problems and ideas, or he needs advice, or different types of things, all these personal problems that the friend is there for, okay? And he says, the nature of this type of friend is to love the other person like himself. And he'll do for the other person whatever he'll do for himself and even more than himself. One second. So what we want to know is what's the nature of this type of friendship. In other words, I can understand the friendship like a businessman or a politician, where they're friends as long as they could use the person and afterwards it's gone. I can understand a psychological friendship where you enjoy the person. Like, let's say, for instance, sometimes people are friends in high school. And then after high school, they go their own ways, and that's it. It's over with. You see? It's gone. The third type of friendship, you could separate for years, and the friendship will still be there. It's a friendship that is a different type of friendship, and I think we have to define that third type, what it is. The question is there anything that will break the relationship of the third level, right? The answer is, I guess, I assume, that if somebody changes their value, then the friendship will change. They change their value system, then the friendship will change. But as long as they both have the same value system, their friendship would endure even if they're not together. Even if they don't have any relationship for years, they would still have a relationship. Okay. I'd like to start with an interesting thing. There are people called philosophers. Philosopher, you have to be careful. There's a difference between a philosopher and a philosophy teacher. Philosophy teacher gives over ideas. They'll tell you about what justice is. He'll talk about different ideas about life, and they give his philosophy. Give different philosophies. A philosopher is a person that lives by his ideas. He makes decisions
based on his ideas. Okay? And then there is a tzaddik, okay, a person that becomes a thinker through Torah, and because of the Torah ideas, he becomes a thinker. Okay? The question is, what's the difference between the two? I'd like to give you two differences. One difference is, a philosopher, when he writes, if you look at the way philosophers write, they want to express their philosophy and get across their philosophy. Okay? A tzaddik, when he writes, has to know what the needs of the people are, and he has to write based on the needs of the people. Okay? Each of the righteous that wrote, at any, like for instance, the Mishnah. When was the Mishnah written? When the needs of the people were, because the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we didn't have a Sanhedrin, we didn't have a Supreme Court, we had nobody to make decisions when there was a difference of opinion. So therefore there was a fear that the system would be lost, so they wrote down the Mishnah. That's all the laws as it was at the time, from Har Sinai, from Mount Sinai, as it was at that time, all the laws. That was a need. The Rambam, when he wrote his book on philosophy, it was a need. He saw there was a need for certain people. The book wasn't written for everybody, but for certain people that had confusion in the world of God and understanding, and there were different philosophies at the time that people were making mistakes on what the correct view of what Torah is talking about, so he had to straighten it out. The thinkers wrote based, the tzaddikim that followed Torah wrote on the needs of the people. The second thing is that you'll notice a philosopher might be kind, he might do justice, he might not. A tzaddik, the highest level of a tzaddik is the Rambam, where he was doing justice for the nation of Israel to such an extent. This is one of the unique, most abstract thinkers that lived. I mean, even secular philosophers read his book and try to understand what he's saying. You understand? So the thing is that he was an abstract thinker, and in his later years, he wrote that he only has time to learn a little bit on Shabbos. He wrote his, what he does. In the morning, he used to go to the Sultan. He was a physician to the Sultan. And he did that for political reasons to benefit Israel, the nation of Israel, because they were at the very low ebb at that time. And he tried to get political favors from the Sultan. And then there were a lot of poor Jews that they could not afford a doctor, so he used to take care of all these people without charge. They say he was thin as a rail, and he only ate once a day. And many times when he would have his patients come, he would have to lie down. He couldn't stand. He used every ounce of energy to benefit the people. This is a different, this is a tzaddik. It's a different type of a person. The nature of a person that lives by where the ideas of Torah affect your personality and make and formulate who you are is very different than a philosopher where his ideas make his personality. It's never like Torah personality. It's very different. So the thing is that when a person like that has a friendship, in other words, where the essence of his life, what defines him, is the life of Torah. It affects his emotions. It affects the way he looks at life, you see. So that type of friendship is based on that philosophy. That's the basis of his whole life. You understand? Identification, like the second level, that is not your whole life. You can identify with the different people. You understand? But the thing is that here it's a different type of relationship. It's based on the value system. The value system of Torah, it produces a different type of person as we described above. We're still in verse 17. And when we left, we basically told over about we said there were three levels of friendship, and we said the highest level, and we gave a description from the commentaries. So we'd like to know, this pasuk is telling us that there's a difference between the highest level, that at all times he loves his friend, he's attached to his friend, but a brother is only a brother in a situation of trouble. Otherwise, he doesn't relate to him. Question is, what does that mean? What is he talking about? What it means by brother, it's not necessarily a brother. It doesn't have to literally mean a sibling. But however, the reason why he uses a sibling is because a sibling, they work together because of a strong identification. They have a strong identification with each other, so therefore they work together. Now, the thing is, identification, when you identify with a person, but you have negative traits, the identification can only last unless until one of your negative traits are hit. You understand? Let's say, for instance, you're stingy and he borrows money from you and he doesn't pay back. I mean, a brother or a friend. It doesn't, not necessarily only a brother. It's a friend where you identify with. So the reason why they said brother is because a brother, a sibling, is definitely identification. But the highest level of a friendship is a person that has removed his negative traits. So therefore, he's always a friend. At all times, he's a friend. In all situations, and he doesn't lose that friendship because of negative traits. He doesn't have any negative traits to pull him away from a friendship. Or if he does have a negative trait, he recognizes when it's working, and he deals with it. He won't make a decision based on the negative trait. But however, regular people, when they have friends, there's a certain identification, but they have negative traits, so the friendship lasts, or is only in those situations where you need each other, and it can break down by negative because of negative traits. You see? In other words, by the other person, by the first person, by the tzaddik, by the thinker, the person also has, when he has a friendship, there's a certain feeling that he identifies, but because he doesn't have negative traits, or when he negative traits are awakened, he's able to deal with it, not make decisions on it, so he doesn't give up his friendship. And therefore, the friendship is at all times. But however, the friendship that comes from an identification like a sibling, so therefore the friendship is only in certain situations, and also it's not at all times, it's not in all situations, and it can break down. Given the right situation, hitting the right negative emotion, then the friendship can break down. That's the difference between the two friends. Whereas a friend at all times is the type of person that he doesn't have negative traits to break up a friendship. He doesn't unless you change your value system and he's against your values. But insofar as his own, in other words, he might decide because objectively you are not a real friend, so he won't be a friend of yours. But the thing is, he won't break up because of his own negative traits. You understand?
Yeah.
It's a very high level. It's not a regular type of friendship. I'm not saying that one has identification and one doesn't. I'm saying that one doesn't have negative traits to break up a friendship. In other words, there's two types. In other words, he could break up, the higher level will break up a friendship if he feels your value system is wrong. So therefore, objectively, he doesn't want to relate to you. But in regular people, they have negative traits. And if you hit that emotion, that person is going to break up with you because of his own weaknesses, his own bad traits. Insofar as identification, one identification comes from his emotions, one identification comes from his value. He identifies with people with the same value system. Based on, in other words, his identification is based on his value system. In other words, on the higher level, his emotions are in line with his view of life, his value system, so therefore his identification attaches to that. It's a certain level.
All right. This is verse 18. And it says, a man that lacks heart, meaning mind, okay? Like he's a non-thinker. He shakes a hand to, I will explain in a minute. And it says, and he, why shake his hand? Because he becomes a guarantor for his friend. Guarantor is, in other words, if you want to borrow money, and so they say, look, if you, so somebody guarantees the loan. In other words, if you can't pay the loan, then the guarantor will pay the loan. So, co-signer. So, the thing is they call that person that does that a chasar lei, person that's lacking intelligence. Okay? Question is, why? The thing is that you're setting yourself up. That, in other words, a guarantor is usually a guarantee, you know, you're talking about thousands of dollars. You're talking about a person that needs money for business or something, and you guarantee the loan. Right? Now, the thing is that that will not cause you to keep your friendship, and then you'll have to go to court to fight these things and to work these things out. The thing is that the Pasuk is telling us two things. One is when somebody asks you to do them a favor, it gotta be thought out. You can't always be a nice person. Sometimes, like you feel, oh, I should be nice. He's my friend. How could I turn him down? You have to know what the responsibilities are, and if you could live with these responsibilities. You can't live with the responsibilities, then you can't take it upon yourself. Their responsibility. Alright? So the thing is that you have to know when kindness goes too far. There's a good example about Lot that was Avram's nephew, and he lived in Sodom, but he learned from Abraham about the idea of having guests and taking care of your guests. So he had these two guests that came into his house, and the people of Sodom wanted the two guests to do whatever they wanted, you know, whatever the Sodom did. But at a certain point, what he said was that, I'll give you my daughters, don't bother, don't take away the guests. In other words, he had Avram's philosophy to an extreme beyond which a person should go. You understand? So he's willing to give up his daughters for whatever they would do with them, so that he should protect the guests. That type of kindness is going too far, you see? So that's what the Pasuk is saying. There's a certain kindness that just goes too far beyond which you are obligated or responsible to take care of. I just want to point out that sometimes we feel uncomfortable refusing a kindness to a friend. And you should know, if it's an extreme request that could put you into a lot of problems, then you should refuse. Even though you feel uncomfortable, but you still refuse, you should really think through what you're taking upon yourself and when it's too far. Verse 19. Says, he who loves evil loves quarrels, and he who raises his mouth, in other words, what it means by raising the mouth means to brag or to talk always about great about himself, he's seeking to be broken or to be destroyed. In other words, the question is, what does the two things have to do with each other? Well, you understand, like the person that is a quarrelsome person, the person that brags. Two different types of people. Well, what is the comparison between the two? Right. So what they have in common is that they both, there's two ways of starting a fight. Either I start a fight, I start a quarrel, or I talk of myself greatly of myself
that's going to turn off people. That's also going to hurt people, because people feel when you talk great about yourself and always you point out the good points, and especially in relationship to others, so people feel put down. Okay, so they're both starting a fight. Okay, question is, which one do you think is worse? But the thing is, insofar, in other words, the pasuk says that it says he loves pesha, sin or evil. He loves to quarrel, but it doesn't say the consequence. In the second one, it says, he brags is seeking to be broken. In other words, which seems to be, it points out the consequence, seems to be pointing to the fact that the greater harm to the self, would be the person that brags about himself, would be the greater harm. In other words, the guy that really wants to, like, usually a person that brags is a person that wants to protect his ego. You understand, he has a weak ego, and he has to constantly he has to constantly show how good he is to overcome the weak ego. And the truth is, in the long run, he'll be broken. In other words, he tries to raise himself up, right, by bragging, and then the reverse says that he'll be broken. Broken means he raises himself and be brought down. So it seems to be from the pasuk that the worst, more consequences will come from the braggart than the one that wants to start a quarrel. And I think the pasuk is right. I think most people hate a braggart much more than they hate a person that starts a fight with them. In other words, the one that starts a quarrel is usually the one that puts the person down, right? While the braggart is the person that builds himself up. And yet people hate the person that builds himself up more than the one that puts you down. The question is, why? In other words, when you speak about, let's say, a person that's a tease, that puts others down, it sounds like that guy should be worse. People should dislike him more. Yet we all know the worst thing is you hate a braggart. You might dislike a guy that's a tease, but a braggart is worse, right? Everybody feels that way. But the question is why. It sounds, when you go over the idea, sounds like the guy that's putting me down, I should hate him more than the guy that brags, right? Now, why is the guy that brags more hated than, let's say, the tease? They're both hated. Question is, one is hate, seems to be hated more. Question is why. So he wants to say like this, that if I'm tease you, so then I'm talking to you, I recognize you as a human, but I'm just pointing out your faults. But if I'm bragging, like you are nothing. I'm the only important thing. You're not worth talking about. You know what I mean? Like, it's a total, like, you totally ignore the other person. You're only there only to recognize my greatness. I'm not interested enough in you to even discuss your faults, to put you down. You're absolutely like you looked at like you're not there. You're only there only to listen to me. But at least if I attack you, at least I recognize that you're a person. You understand? It's a greater blow to the ego from the braggart, because he doesn't even look down. He doesn't look at you like I'm up here and you should only listen. And I don't look at you at all. We're at chapter 17, verse 20. And it says, a crooked heart will not find good. And he who turns his tongue, in other words, he thinks one thing and then says the opposite, where his tongue goes the opposite, he will fall into harm. It says evil, but evil over here means harm. Okay? That's the verse. A crooked heart, okay, will not find good. And he who turns or twists his tongue
will fall into harm. The first question is what's a crooked heart, and what's the difference between a crooked heart and a forked tongue, okay? And what's the difference between the consequences? One is will not find good, and one, he will fall into harm, okay? The best thing for verse 20 is to read the Rabbeinu Yonah, who's very good on this. He says, Ikesh Lei, person that has a twisted heart, he is a man that his mind is confused and he doesn't recognize the truth. Therefore, he will not find good. Of course, you can only find good from your mind. And he brings a proof from a pasuk. Then he says the person that twists his tongue, he says like this, he who recognizes the truth, but with his tongue he says false, the opposite of what the truth is. And he gives an example. He makes the wicked righteous because he loves the evil, and he condemns the righteous because he hates him. He will fall into harm, and that harm is more harmful than the twisted heart, because he goes after the fault on purpose. Therefore, it says he will not find good. By one person says he will not find good, and by the second one, where he does it on purpose, he says he will fall into evil. The question is, why? In other words, the question is like this: according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the person that lies is worse because he does it on purpose, and therefore his consequence is worse. But the truth is, if your mind is confused, so you're also going to make terrible mistakes, and you should also get consequences. What's the difference about the purpose? It depends on the consequences based on your action. You understand? So why is one the consequence? Where does he see that the consequence is worse for a liar than for a person that is confused in his thinking? You understand? In other words, confused in your thinking, the consequence doesn't seem to be as great. You won't get any benefits. But however, if you're a liar, you will get harm. I mean, if you don't get benefits, I mean, basically, if you have a confused mind, you'll also get harm too.
The difference is...
So David wants to say like this. He wants to say that a person that lies is doing an act that is evil. And since when a person consciously does an act that is evil, like he's aware of it, so then what happens is these things tend to get worse. The person is not static. He's constantly moving. And therefore, if he does an evil act, so therefore intentionally, so that intention will grow and he'll cause his own downfall. Okay? The person that is confused in the mind is not doing harm, but in other words, he'll make mistakes in the physical world, and he'll be harmed by the physical world where he makes the mistakes because he thinks incorrectly, because he's confused in his thinking. But the thing is, he doesn't ruin his personality by getting worse, and so therefore, that's why he wants to say that he causes greater harm to himself by lying, by consciously doing an incorrect act that affects his personality, and his personality slowly will get worse. And as your personality gets worse, that means you're further from reality and you'll destroy yourself quicker. But a person that's confused stays at that same level of whatever he does wrong in life, that's what he does wrong, but it doesn't necessarily get worse. The question is why, in other words, what's the difference if it's conscious or he's not aware of it? Why is when he's aware of it, is it worse? I mean, if you're doing something wrong, it should get worse. Okay? That's the question.
Okay.
The answer is that the that a person that does not consciously do evil, but he's guided by, without being aware, he might do good or bad, he might make correct decisions or incorrect decisions, is a person living, what Esther wanted to say, that he's living by his personality. You see, there are people that live by their personality their whole lives, and they really make the same decisions that they made in school and as adults. I mean, the situation changes, but they never change. They seem to be, they don't get bad, worse or better. They just live by their personality without any change. I mean, you see that in a lot of people. But once a person goes out to do harm, in other words, like intentionally lie, so then that will really affect him. Because then, as the situation changes, he needs more manipulation, and then he's once he trains himself that he doesn't care about harming people, about lying to people, then he could do physical harm. Well, it grows, it develops. How it develops in each person might be different, but there is a development of the evil. But if you live by your personality, So then there's no change in who you are at all.
What is that?
The question is, what if you have an addictive personality? Well, the first time you take cigarettes or drugs, that's a conscious act. That's a conscious act. I mean, if you decide not to take the first act, you don't get addicted on the first act.
I understand, but that's...
So Doug wants to say that... did we get the question down? Did we put the question on tape? Oh, let's do it again. The question is, let's say a person has an addictive personality. So if he has an addictive personality, he'll also destroy himself. He'll find some addiction. Once he hits the addiction, he'll destroy himself. So Doug wants to say that when you do evil, like lying, so then you have caused yourself to be destroyed. You will go down the line. And sooner or later, you know, destroy yourself. In other words, you do not stay in one place, you keep getting worse. But a person that goes along in an incorrect view, you understand, and he's not doing evil, so then it really depends on the situation. If he's raised in let's say he goes to school where nobody takes drugs and nobody smokes, so it could be that he'll never get addicted to it, even if he has an addictive personality. Goes to another place, he will get caught. It's a matter of chance. He is not, and we're not saying that the first person will not have consequences, and some of them very bad consequences. But it's a matter of chance. It's a matter of outside circumstances that cause it. So it depends if those outside circumstances occur, so then he will get the, it's a certain chance that he'll get the consequences. So sometimes terrible, sometimes not so bad. People live out their lives and they don't have such a bad life. Okay? But however, if you start doing evil, then you start going down the road to self-destruction. So the question is why is Shlomo telling us this? Okay? In other words, if it was very clear cut, so it seems to be that one person doesn't get the consequences, one person does. So what I think King Solomon is telling us, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is that there is no guarantees in this world. You know what I mean? There's a lot of outside factors. I mean, you could be a tzaddik and you could do everything correctly. I mean, you see Rabbi Akiva or Eov, Job. I mean, it was outside circumstances that affected them. Could affect anybody. Then you have to. But if you're a chacham, so then you deal with it correctly. If you don't, if you're not a chacham, so then you could cause, you can make terrible mistakes in those type of situations. It's a measurement. But however, he's telling you where you that's a matter of chance. If you're not an intelligent person, you're not trained to think like by Mishlei, so then it's a matter of chance whether you'll make it or not. Some people do, some people don't. It's a matter of chance. That's the way it is, and that's it. But however, if you do an evil act, like you lie to people for your own benefit, right? So then you are starting down a path that if you don't repent, we're not saying you can't repent, but if you don't repent, then you'll go down that path to self-destruction. That's what he's saying. In other words, there's no guarantee in the physical world. But a chacham, in most cases, will be able to work out, no matter what happens, he'll be able to do the correct act and work it out. The person that is confused of mind, he doesn't think correctly, that person that's guided by his personality, what's going to happen is a matter of chance. I think that's what he's telling us. In other words, you are right that the first person just goes on without thinking, and it's just a matter of circumstances that's going to affect him. But the second person, what happens is he affects himself. He changed, there's going to be a change in his outlook on life and how far he will go in doing harm to others. Once you take a certain step, that step, usually you will continue on. Everybody has free will. There's certain people that they can't do evil. I mean, they have a very strong conscience, and they can't do any evil. So, but their conscience will cause them certain decisions, to make certain decisions, that they'll always make those decisions, and there's certain situations where those decisions are good, there's certain situations where those decisions are bad. But most people have the ability to lie, to get at, you know what I mean, whenever you get in trouble, the first way, you know, is to lie your way out of it. You understand? And you could do a great harm by that, or you want to harm somebody, or you want to get money from somebody, you want to cheat somebody, so you lie. Now, all these things are part of that. In other words, it will affect you, who you are. It will change who you are, and you're going on a path of self-destruction. In other words, the difference between the first guy and the second guy seems to be that the first guy has some type of a conscience that doesn't let him do evil, and the second guy identifies with evil, and therefore he makes a step towards evil. There's some unconscious identification with evil, so he makes a step towards evil. That's the difference between the two personalities and the two different types of consequences, because of the two different personalities. In other words, it's possible to identify with evil, but you have a strong conscience, so you don't act out based on your identification with evil. Because if your conscience covers up that identification and protects you from doing that action. But a person that doesn't have a strong conscience, so when he identifies with evil, he's going to act out on his idea of evil. In other words, the first guy could also identify with evil, but he has a strong conscience. So he doesn't act on it. So his personality will stay the same. But a person that he identifies with evil and doesn't act on it, he acts on that identification. So then that person will take the evil steps.
Okay, fine.
What the Rabbeinu Yonah is pointing out is that the first guy has, in other words, like this. He could be a person of conflict. So he might identify with evil, but he has a conscience. But he goes by his conscience, so, you know what I mean? That's not a correct way of looking at things, okay? The second guy identifies with evil and sees that, in other words, sees that this person did evil, and then he protects him. And his first step is protecting other people that are evil, okay? So once he takes that step, what the Rabbeinu Yonah says, that step is a dangerous step. Okay, the question is like this. If you do, in other words, what the pasuk seems to be saying is that if you do an evil act, that leads to harm. The question is, what if you do a good act, does that lead to good? The answer is, if you do good because of your conscience, so then you're doing good because of a certain experience. Conscience is an experience. You experience guilt, you experience shame, you experience fear if you go outside of your conscience. So that is an experience. You do, it will not help you, only living by this experience where the experience of fear, shame, and guilt is awakened. But so therefore there will be no change. But if you are a chacham and you make a decision to do an act because you see that that is a good act, then that act will help strengthen your idea, especially when you see the benefits that come out of it. So then that will strengthen your idea. It will strengthen the idea and attach you to the world of ideas in a stronger way. But when you do bad, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, you identify with evil. That's the emotion. Once you identify with evil, so every time you take a step towards evil, you are, that means you identify, you think of yourself as evil. And therefore, as these evil people, you think that's the good. You don't look at yourself as evil, but you look at that as the good, what these evil people are doing. So therefore, once you take that step, then it's only a matter of taking another step.
Then you can identify.
No, because you do not have good. If you do not think correctly, if you're only guided by the conscience, so then when you do an act, that act is only strengthening the conscience. The conscience sometimes can make you do bad things, do stupid things, because it's not a thinking thing. You only do an act based on your experience. It's not a thought. In other words, sometimes there's the right thing to do, but you feel too guilty, you feel ashamed doing it. You know what I mean? Like, what are people going to think? So you can't do the right thing. That's because you have a certain experience of shame. It's not a thought-out thing. The conscience is not a thought-out thing. It is part of the a part of us that we're unaware of. The unaware part of us that we make decisions that is not always good, that is many times harmful. It's definitely what the Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's definitely without thought. So what happens to you is dependent totally on outside circumstances, whether they happen to fit into your personality or they don't. That's it. In other words, the person that lies does not think about whether you should lie or shouldn't lie. He identifies with evil, therefore lying is nothing wrong. The only thing is, he only thinks about lying in such a way without getting caught. So he might think, you understand, he might have a plan, a strategy. But he didn't go down to the basic foundation of life itself. What's the best type of life? Is lying itself a good? You understand? That is acceptance. You see? So the thing is, so the man of conscience, lying is bad. A person that identifies with evil, he doesn't have a conscience that stops him, so he can lie for the evil person. He'll try to prove that the evil person is righteous, and he'll show the righteous person is evil. If a person wants to become good, then he has to investigate the basic foundation, whether you should lie or not, and then he has to investigate his own emotions of that, how he identifies with evil, and so therefore he has to see that that is incorrect, that his whole view, his whole unaware part of him that makes decisions has a totally incorrect view. And the person that has a conscience should start trying to see the correct thing because of ideas and not because of the conscience. In other words, like this. Most people feel that a braggart is bad. You know what I mean? But they don't think about it. But we always say, no, you should think about it, that a braggart makes enemies and the consequences are bad. Or, in other words, why don't you like a braggart? Because a braggart, when he makes himself big, you feel small. So the thing is, it's just so when you feel small, that's an experience, so you hate him because of that he put you down. But that's not why you should not be a braggart. Why you should not be a braggart is you should evaluate. Bragging, let's say I have a bad self-image, and bragging helps me out. So that's a good thing. So maybe I should brag. On the other hand, I'll make enemies. So now I have to evaluate the benefit of bragging and the benefit and the harm of making enemies. That's a chacham. It's not, he doesn't make a decision that he feels that I feel bad. He doesn't make decisions on his experiences. He makes decisions based on his mind when it's thought out. You understand? That is the difference. Many times a person that has a good conscience, you understand? So he thinks, well, I'm in line with Torah. See, because I don't lie and I don't do this and I don't do that. That's true. You're in line with Torah and you will not be evil. But the fact is that you're not a chacham. Because you're not making decisions based on your mind. You're making decisions based on your conscience. That is not a chacham. Okay, to summarize what we have is like this. Basically, the book of Mishle is to tell you that there are different personalities and different personalities, and how the different personalities, where their mistakes are and what the consequences are. And then most of the times the other side of the pasuk tells you the chacham, how the thinker deals in that same situation, how a chacham would deal, and how person with that personality, with a certain personality, that situation would deal, what the consequences are. Okay? That's basically what the pasuk is saying here. There are two personalities. One person is guided by, he doesn't think straight. He thinks straight about life, the way he was trained from his parents, and he has a conscience, and he goes on with life, and if life stays the same, he will have a good life. But if something should go wrong, and he has to move, let's say, to another country, he won't know how to operate in the other country. He'll just operate in his old way. You understand? He operates the old way, the way he always operated. That's the way he operates. A chacham will recognize the difference in the way the countries operate, and he will think it through. You understand? Even if it's not the normal way, he will think about how to operate in this new situation. But most people do not do that. They operate the same way, no matter what the situation is. So if the situation works out well, they could have a very good life. If it doesn't work out well, then they're in real trouble. The person that his personality is that he identifies with evil, and he takes a step towards that identification, and he tries to build evil and try to build evil and break down the righteousness, that person is moving in a certain direction already. He identifies with evil, he's moving in a certain direction. And that person, at some point, will destroy righteous people and benefit the wicked people. He himself will start moving in that direction. And so, therefore, he will have a different type of consequence than the first guy. He causes his own downfall. Verse 21, okay? He who begets a ksil. Ksil is a certain type of fool that he has bad midos, bad traits. He begets them only for his own worry. In other words, it'll cause him to worry. Velo yismach avi navel, but the father of a navel will not be happy. Okay? So, of course, we're saying the ksil is worse than the navel. Is that correct? And again, we have to go to Rabbeinu Yonah to read the Rabbeinu Yonah. He who begets a ksil, which is a certain type of fool, that's for worry. He will worry. It'll cause him a lot of worry, a lot of conflict. Then it says, the Nava will not make his father happy. Okay? So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's a ksil? Ksil has bad traits. Okay? And he says, the Nava is a person that did not acquire any type of wisdom or knowledge. Okay? And then he brings many psukim for that. And then he says the ksil, the one with bad traits, is worse than the navo, because the ksil has to go in an evil way. That's his personality. All his bad traits will come out to action, and the parents will be, they'll see all these terrible things, they'll bother them. Therefore, it gives worry to the parents of the fool. But the father of the novel will not be happy because he won't find any nachas. He won't find a satisfaction or pride in your children. Okay? And then the Rabbeinu says an interesting thing. He says he'll feel very bad because he's leaving. He did all this work. You understand? And then who is he going to leave it to? It's a person that doesn't have, that's a lonely person, that's not a real thinker, that doesn't know how to relate to these things. Okay? That's what the Rabbeinu says.
Yeah, please, Rabbeinu, sorry.
He says, Ki lo yimotzei nachas ruach v'ashrel v'lo yismach b'kinyono. Midato ki lo yanichenu ela leben bozu yupachos. In other words, he says, it takes away his pride in his wealth. In other words, many times when you're wealthy, so you want to leave it to your children that your children will have because they continue in a certain path. But when you see that your child is brainless, you understand he lives a life without any wisdom at all. Like a low type of life, you know, like a person without any type of wisdom lives a low type of life. So he says he feels bad about all his work that he's leaving over to this child that will use all his wealth for his own foolishness. Okay, the question is, what is the purpose? What is the pasuk trying to tell you? I think what the pasuk is trying to tell you is that you should make sure, when you raise your children, the best chance, there's no guarantee. You see that Yitzchak had an Esav, there's no guarantee in this business of parenting. But the best chance that you have of having good children is to raise them with Mussar. By Mussar we mean that you should try to guide them, that they should live their life through the intellect and through the ideas of Mishlei. That's the best chance. That even if a person is born with bad traits, at least if he has the knowledge, he'll be able to deal with it. You understand? So I think that is what the purpose of the pasuk is teaching us. What I think is that a person might have the personality of a ksil. He has bad traits. You understand? But however, if he's trained with chachma, he'll be guided towards wisdom and to deal with those traits. You understand? In other words, it's telling you that training of the parent is a very important process in helping the child develop. You understand? And in most cases, it can overcome. Could overcome harm. In other words, it could overcome the harm of the person, of the child's personality, because you're giving him wisdom to be able to protect himself against all the stupid mistakes that people could make based on their personalities. He's saying that there's two types of children, that there's two different consequences, okay? If you have a child that's ksil, he's going to make your life miserable because he's going to go out to do harmful things. He has a bad personality, and therefore you're going to see your child doing terrible things. You're going to be bothered, okay? And the other child that you could have is a child that just like a novel would be a person who's involved with... like, you know, he's involved with petty things his whole life. Like, you know, you see these people that they live their lives, just work, and then it's all, you know what I mean, all petty things. They're like, there's no life of wisdom at all. No thought. In other words, we're talking about a parent that understands thought, a certain amount of thought. You understand? So, in other words, he's just involved with, with petty things, Therefore, in other words, he's talking about the consequences of two different types of children, how it's going to affect the parent So both of them are bad. But the only thing is they're saying one is worse than the other. But in either case, the best way to avoid either one is to train, is to raise your children with the mussar of like Mishlei. Like the ideas of evaluating and thinking through good and evil, all these ideas. And this pasuk is not telling you how to deal with the different personalities. There are psukim that do. They tell you how to deal with different personalities or different areas of mussar that might talk about that. This pasuk is only telling you of the two types of consequences that you can have as a father if you don't raise your child with the idea of a chacham as a thinker. What can happen to your children? How they make decisions? In other words, the second guy worked his life for money and then he's leaving it with his dum-dum. You know what I mean? He's leaving this for money. He feels bad. Like, what is the guy going to do with his life? Take the money and just continue with his foolishness. That is definitely not the same thing where you have a child that goes up and beats people up or, you know what I mean? Like he's really out to destroy that. It's bad traits to do harm. Then you start worrying. I mean, it bothers you about the child itself.